Tonight we're going to talk about a lesson I think I told you about last night that I've kind of put together some ideas into a lesson. I'm entitled What Every Christian Should Know. And I don't say this tongue-in-cheek. I certainly don't say it lightly. And there will probably be some things you think, man, I wish he'd have covered this that we won't get to. I've given this lesson at home at Gailey. And as I got through and got to talking, one of the brothers said, you know, you could just keep giving that lesson over and over and put different things in it. And I said, you're right, I could. He said, in fact, I got a couple of things that I think you ought to put in the next one. So we talked about it. He was right. But I also don't want you to think that these are things that I preach in a high-handed or high-minded manner. It's not that I think, look at brethren and go, I can't believe they don't know that. And as we go through the lesson tonight, you may think, are there really people who struggle with that? Because you might not. But then when I talk to people about some of the things I have questions about, they'll look at me and think, you've been in the church how long, Roy? And I'll say 30 or so years, and they think, you shouldn't have questions about that. I know that. You know, there are things I might not understand that you do, and things that other people struggle with that you don't. I heard it said one time in school, there's no such thing as a stupid question. I really don't agree with that sometimes, because I've had students ask questions that I know they intended to be stupid questions. But if there's a question somebody has about religious matters, if our brethren have a question about a spiritual thing, and they're honest about it, it's not a stupid question. So I want to turn to Hebrews chapter 5 when Paul was addressing a congregation I think he felt that way about. I think he kind of looked at them and thought, really? But he was nicer about it than maybe we would be. He said in Hebrews chapter 5 verse 12, "For when the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." When addressing this congregation, I think Paul looked at him and said, you know, there are things I think you ought to be teaching others, but you can't because you don't know them well enough. And you know, at least maybe they weren't teaching others false things or things that weren't completely developed. But you know, there are things in our Christian life we ought to be able at some point to move past. There are things we ought to be able to grasp as basics and move on to the more complicated matters, the more difficult matters, the meatier matters, as they call them. And we ought to be able to teach outsiders the basics. We ought to be able to teach our brethren who are new the basics. But sometimes, even though we've been around a while, we'll find people in the church who, even though they've been around a while, there are things they don't know. Brethren, don't lose patience with them. Teach them. Maybe they should be past it, but they're not. I remember I struggled with math. I don't know if I struggled because I wasn't good at it or I struggled because I absolutely hated it. But both were true. I wasn't good at it and I did hate it. But every year the teachers would come back in the beginning of the school year and try to teach us what they had taught us at the beginning of last year. And some students who got what we did last year thought this was a waste of time. But those of us who didn't get it last year, number one, because we weren't listening. Number two, because we didn't like it. Needed that. And so those who got it the first time just had to be patient with those who didn't. And tonight we're going to go through some things that may be new, old hat to you, and some things that may be new hat to you. But I want to talk about some things I want us all to understand so we can be stronger and teach others. So tonight we're going to talk about some things that I hope all of us as Christians do know, but if we have some questions, maybe we'll be stronger in those things and move on to the meatier matters and teach others the basics. I hope it's not a waste of your time. I don't think preaching the gospel is ever a waste of anybody's time, and I hope you don't consider it that way tonight. I want to go through the lesson tonight, understanding that some of us maybe should be past some of these issues. Maybe we're not, but I want to treat it the way I treat my students. I said a while ago that there's, you know, they tell us there's no such thing as a stupid question if you really don't know it. I've been asked some questions I've thought were pretty stupid in my day by my students because I thought they were questions they were asking just to be cute. I used to have a student named Rhett. My kids had heard me talk about Rhett a lot. Rhett wasn't a bad kid, but Rhett wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, as they say. And so Rhett would ask questions, and I'd look at him sometimes and think, is he serious or is he just pulling my leg? Because I couldn't tell. We were in the library one day, and they were supposed to be looking up authors by last name. He was looking up an author whose name began with the letter M, as in Mary, and the books in the library are K categorized by author's last name, beginning with A and going all the way through the alphabet to Z. And so he's looking for this author. His name is M. And he looked at me and said, Mr. Deering, is M before or after T? Brett was in the ninth grade. And I thought for a moment, surely he's not serious. And so my initial response, if you know me, is something smart, Alecky, because I thought he was teasing me. I was going to tease him right back. But then he looked at me with that deadpan look. He was serious. So I told him, I said, the M's are before T. They're over there. That's sad. But you can't help but answer the question. You know, you may have had brethren ask you questions through the years that you thought, they can't be serious. Surely they don't not know that. If they don't know it, brethren, it may be sad. Maybe they've been around the church 20 years and don't understand baptism. They were baptized, maybe they don't understand it. We need to be patient with them but explain these things. So I want to begin with some things this evening that you might think we all know. Number one, I want us to not misunderstand, the church is not a denomination. The world calls their religious bodies denominations, and I know we understand. And this may seem to us to not be a real issue because we don't get into those discussions a lot, and we understand this, but I don't want us to be misled by the world and all their denominational differences and all the names they have. We are not a denomination. And the reason I mention that is because I've heard people in the church say, oh, somebody was talking to me and they asked me what denomination I was, and so I told them Church of Christ. And I know most of us understand what a denomination is. But I want us to go back a little bit and understand, and I've even done this in my lessons before, when we refer to some religious body, they're not a church. We might refer to them as this church or that church. There's just one church. And we need to be protective of that name because the scriptures are. We shouldn't refer to some other body as any kind of church. Now, I know it may be habit so much in us that it takes a while to forget because I've done it from the pulpit before. And people have said, you shouldn't call this body a church. I say, you know, I know that. I didn't realize I did that. But I want us to make no bones about the fact that we're not a denomination. Now, the world doesn't understand that and probably doesn't care. But I want to mention a couple things to you. The scriptures say in Matthew chapter 16, beginning verse 16, Jesus has been having a discussion with the disciples. Remember, he said, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And Peter, as Peter always did, was the first to respond. And he said, some say that thou art, you know, John the Baptist, or thou art Elias, or one of the prophets. And Jesus was told by Peter, thou art Christ, the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him in verse 17 of Matthew 16 and said, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee, he's talking to Peter still, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And he went on to say, I'll give you the keys to the kingdom. And later, remember on the day of Pentecost, Peter opened the door, preaching the first gospel sermon. Peter literally had the keys to the kingdom. The kingdom was opened. The doors to the church were opened. The church began. When Peter preached and people responded and were baptized, the Bible said the same day were added in the 3,000 souls. The Bible teaches us that the church doors were opened by Peter. Jesus said his church, one church. There's only one church. And so I want us to be very careful in how we refer to religious bodies. Again, I don't want us to be disrespectful. I think many of those people are sincere in their faith. They are misguided and misunderstood or whatever it is. But I want us to be careful because we need to understand, and again, not in a haughty manner, but there's one church. We're members of that church, and it's not a denomination. The world divides what they call the church into denominations so they can keep track of one another. The word denomination literally means divisions of the original. There should never be divisions of the church. But in the religious world who doesn't understand what the church is, there are. I want you to think of it this way. In money terms, we understand denominations. I'm not sure what denominations I happen to have on me. Usually they're ones, maybe fives. Occasionally I've got a 20. I might even have had a 50 before, but I don't keep the bigger denominations very often. But the word denomination in reference to money means divisions of the whole. The whole is money. In America, we have our currency divided into pennies and nickels and dimes. I think it's funny that lately we have new pennies. I guess the old ones don't work anymore. I guess maybe somebody was counterfeiting the originals. I don't know what the problem was, but we have denominations. We understand that. That's what it means in religion too. Denominations are divisions of, or what they consider, parts of what they consider the whole. They think everybody religious is the church. And so there's different divisions of what they call the church worldwide. And this group and that group, brethren, we're not one of those groups. The Bible says, Ephesians 5 verse 23, Christ is the head of the body. Church. There's just one. Secondly, tonight I want to remind you, brethren, and again, I'm not criticizing or harping on anyone. I don't have anybody in mind to talk about tonight, but I want us to not forget, it's not just a good idea to be in the worship on the Lord's Day for the communion. It's a command. And I know we know that, but I think sometimes along the way some of our brethren get misled by religious people who say, well, you know, we normally go to church, but this weekend we're going to the lake. So we won't be there. We were behind a lady in Walmart not long ago who apparently went to wherever they worship at with the girl checking her out because they talked and they talked and they talked and they talked. And the lady said, well, were you at church Sunday? And the girl said, no, I wasn't. I had something else to do. You know, brethren, I understand the religious world, that's not a problem. It's a problem for Christians. The Bible says in Acts chapter 20, verse 7, the disciples, when the disciples gathered together on the first day of the week to break bread, Paul preached unto them. It does not say they gathered together for the purpose of Paul to preach to them, and while they were there, they broke bread. It says on the first day of the week, they were gathering together to break bread, and while they were there, Paul preached unto them. Jesus, when he gathered in the upper room with the disciples, you go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, you read wherever you want to. When Jesus gathered with the disciples, when he taught them what would later become what we call the Lord's Supper, the communion, when he sat down and explained to them how to do it, why to do it, he wasn't just suggesting something that might be helpful. He commanded them to observe it. He said, "This do in remembrance of me." The Bible in Acts chapter 20, verse 7 tells us the disciples did it on the first day of the week. And so I want to remind you again, many of you understand this. It's not a problem. You would never break this. If you are physically able to gather with the brethren somewhere on the Lord's Day, you're required to gather with the brethren somewhere on the Lord's Day to break bread. And also, as the Bible said in 1 Corinthians 16, to give of your means on the first day of the week. That's not an option. It's not something we just do because we've always done it. Now, I realize when you're growing up, many of the kids here tonight think, well, I don't really have a choice to go to church if I don't. Well, there really is no option to don't. My folks are going, so I'm going. I understand that. When you're a child, you kind of go where your folks go because that's the only choice you have. As an adult, we need to understand this on Lord's Day morning when we gather tomorrow here or when you gather wherever you're going to gather, it's a wonderful privilege. It's something we do want to do. It is the highlight of our week. I don't care what the weather's like outside. I don't care what our health is like. I like it to be good, but if it's not good, that's still the highlight of our week. But rather, even if it's not the highlight of your week, and if it's not, brethren, examine yourselves. It's a command we need to make amends for if we break it. I talked to a brother in one of the congregations where we preach from time to time not long ago because somebody told me, whether they should have told me or not, they did. They told me he and his family missed services because they went to the lake and they just had church by themselves at the lake. They didn't have communion. They sang and they prayed. And it's not that they couldn't be with the brethren. They chose not to be. I love this brother. A lot of respect for how far he's come in his life. He's overcome a lot of things. He's trying, I think, from what he understands, but I don't think he understood until we had the discussion. It's not optional to miss services because you got to work. It's not optional to miss services because you didn't plan for church on Lord's Day morning when you were making your travel plans for vacation. It's not optional to miss the communion if you can physically be with the brethren. Now, granted, I understand if you're running 110 fever and throwing up every 5 minutes, you may be too sick to be with the brethren for a number of reasons. Number one, your health may not permit it on your part. Number two, the brethren probably don't want what you got. I understand if we're, you know, when I had my heart attack on Friday, And I'm not bragging by any means. Some of you have been through these kinds of things before. I didn't have the option on Sunday morning to go to worship. I didn't like that. But it wasn't possible. Some of you understand, when we miss services, when we can't be there, your kids are sick, and so you've got to stay home with them. Whatever the case may be, I hope you miss it. I want it to be something that just ruins your week because you want to be there. But if you could have been and aren't, whole different story. It's a sin for us to choose not to be there. It's not just something that we like. Vacation and work and jobs, travel, busy. We need to make sure we understand the teaching. Number three, I don't want us as Christians to ever forget. We'll answer for what we say, even if the words we say aren't those big, ugly words that we know we shouldn't say. There are certain words, I am not going to say them, and you know I'm not going to say them, that every Christian knows should never come out of their mouth. I don't care how many letters they have, there are certain words we know we shouldn't say. Now, I think there's a lot of words in some Christians' vocabulary today that they ought to know they shouldn't say, but they apparently don't. Society has adopted some new words because they're not permitted with the old ones that are just as bad as the old ones, and some of us are saying them. It's a whole different lesson. We need to be careful. But you know, even if we're not saying words that make our grandmother turn red, we can still be wrong in how we're talking. It doesn't just have to be cursing and swearing. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 26, Jesus said, "But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account of thereof in the day of judgment." Jesus didn't say just every curse word. Every time you embarrass your mother or somebody around you by the words you've chosen because they're just the bad words, Jesus said idle words. Idle words are words that did not process through here before they came out here. Some of you may be like me. I love to talk. I've been talking probably since I came out of my mother's womb, and I've probably been talking until the Lord takes me away. I've talked all my life, and I don't intend on stopping. I like to talk. I talk to people I know and I talk to people I don't know. I've been the kind of person in Oklahoma, I'm one of those you see on the highway, I wave at people. The kids go, "Who was that, Dad?" I don't know. I like people. I like to talk to people. But with that talking comes responsibility. In Ephesians 4, chapter verse 29, it says, "Let every word that proceeds out of your mouth be good." That is a tremendously heavy charge. Because let me tell you, there's been a lot of words come out of this mouth. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of words come out of this mouth that haven't been considered. Some of you heard as my father told me I'm supposed to listen at least twice as much as I talk. I don't think I have. Brethren, we are to be people who are following the biblical commands on not gossiping and not backbiting, not slandering. There are things we might say that are true that are not helpful. You know, Paul said some things are legal, but they're not expedient. Again, I'm going to embarrass my oldest son this time tonight. Noah, when he was about 3 years old, was in a shopping cart at the grocery store with me. Noah's always been a great kid. I'm not just saying that because he's here. And I'm not saying that because I'm his dad. He's good in spite of me, I think. I tell people I hope someday to grow up to be as good as him. But he was in a shopping cart one time when he was very small. He could barely talk, but he could talk. I learned that day. We were behind, and I'm going to say this as nicely as I can, behind a woman in the grocery store line that was somewhat bigger than I am. Substantially bigger than I am. And so we're sitting there, and I don't know where he ever learned a language like this, but he said, "Dad," as kids will do quietly, "look how fat that lady is." She didn't appreciate that much. Of course, she wasn't mad at him. She was mad at the father from whom he probably learned things. He wasn't wrong, and I don't really think anything he said was a sin, but it wasn't expedient. There are lots of things we might say, brethren, that might not be wrong in the words themselves. There are lots of things that might not be lies. They might not be gossip, but they're not helpful. Ephesians 4, "Let every word that proceeds out of your mouth be good to the use of edifying somebody." We're going to answer for those. And be careful if you're a person who likes to talk about idle words, because we will answer for those idle words. Number four tonight, I want to talk about the fact that in the world today, I don't know that we'll ever make them understand, but to us, the hair teaching still applies. And I'm not here tonight just to tell women not to cut their hair. I'm here to tell you 1 Corinthians 11, like all the passages of the New Testament, still are true. I don't care if it's Ephesians 4, Matthew 26, whatever passage you want to pick in the New Testament or the Old, they're still true. 1 Corinthians 11 is one of those passages people will have when they'll say, well, that was a long time ago. As if it stopped being true somewhere. And again, I'm not just talking about the fact that women shouldn't cut their hair. But I'm doing a turn to 1 Corinthians 11. And I want to read through that because I want to mention a couple of things, brethren, to remind you of the spiritual significance to men and women to being in obedience and submission to God. 1 Corinthians 11, I'm going to begin in verse 3. Because Paul said, I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. I'm going to stop for a moment to do something you've probably seen done before. I want to make sure you understand again. Paul is talking not about spiritual importance, not about power or strength or anything like that. He's talking about spiritual authority. This is not optional for us to believe or not believe. It does not matter if we like it or agree with it. This is how it is. Kind of like in math. I've never really understood why 2 plus 2 was 4, but the teacher told me, math is a teaching of absolutes. It just is. I teach literature. We interpret. Some things mean one thing, some things mean another. Sometimes I'll ask my students, what did the poet mean when he wrote this? And they'll say, I don't have any idea, Mr. Jen, because I wasn't there when the poet wrote it, and I'm not the poet, so I don't know what he meant. You know what? I agree with that answer. We don't really know what the poet meant every time he wrote something, because most of it was written in the 1600s, and if we weren't there, we don't know for sure. I told one of my college professors that one time. He didn't think that was very funny. But you know, this is not something we can interpret the way we want. He said the head of Christ is God. Christ is the head of every man. And the head of every woman is the man. That's just the way it is. In spiritual authority terms, that is a given. It's a rule that we begin with. It's kind of like in math, when they give you a problem, they say X equals 5, and you want to go, why? It just does. But he goes on. Based on this, he says, and he's talking about praying. If every man praying or prophesying having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head. For that is even as all, it is even all one as if she were shaven. For if a woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. He's going back to Genesis and reminding us, the woman came from the man. She was created by God for the glory of the man. Like it or not, 20th century America, that's the way it is. Now the world's women don't like it. But that's what God said. Now he goes on. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, verse 11, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as much as the woman is of the man, taken from the rib of Adam, remember, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Men, we're not better than women in importance because without women we wouldn't be here. We depend on each other. Not just husbands and wives, but men and women, brothers and sisters. Judge yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? He goes on, verse 14, doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. I want to go back, and I'm not going to cover that as we should in great detail because we don't have time. That's a passage that takes, you all know, lesson after lesson to cover completely. I want to mention a couple things. And again, most of us in the church understand this, but I want to just go over to make sure we understand the significance is not just you've got to cut your hair or you don't get to cut your hair. He began with spiritual authority, then he talked about praying. There is spiritual significance to this. It's not hairstyle significance. It's not what you want significance. It's not what Paul wanted us to believe he thought we should do significant. Regardless of what the world said, Paul did not hate women. I can promise you one of Paul's favorite people in life was a woman. That would have been his mother. Paul's teaching God's command. So he said, if a man prays with his head covered. Now understand there's two heads he's talking about. It doesn't translate that way in the English. But in the original there's two heads. The physical head on your shoulders, the one between your ears, and the spiritual head in this list we just talked about. He said, if a man prays with his head covered, with his hair long, he is insignificance covering his spiritual head.
Now think about this. When we go to pray, men, we know in the church, we pray, as our brother did earlier, in the name of Christ. Christ intercedes for us. We pray through Christ to the Father. Our prayers are heard by the Father through Christ. I can't pray without Christ. I can't pray through anyone else except Christ. I shouldn't pray trying to leave Christ out. That's what he's saying. When I cover my head physically, I spiritually cover my head, and therefore my prayers in my attempt to pray are going around Christ trying to reach the Father, and they're not going to go there. Not possible. If I allow my physical hair to grow, because God decided that. I don't get to say, well, God, that was stupid to decide that. He decided it. It's a given. God said if I let my hair grow as a man, uncontrolled, I'm trying to pray around my spiritual head through God. My prayers as a man are not heard. On the other hand, he said, remember, women also pray through Christ, but they've got a head in the way. They've got a man in the way. So he gives them their hair for a covering. They cover their physical head so they can at the same time cover. It's not dishonoring the man by any means. It is honoring the man. You cover your physical head to cover your spiritual head, so your prayers go where they should through Christ to the Father. Think about this, mothers. According to the teachings of Scripture, I won't say according to Paul. Paul just wrote it down. God inspired Paul, so God said, mothers, if you uncover your head and your children need your prayers, you are of no use to them. I don't know a mother on the planet who doesn't want to pray for her children. I don't know a father on the planet who doesn't want to pray for his wife or his brother. I'll use a personal example. In June, and maybe even July, and maybe even now, some of y'all have been praying for me for my health. Thank you, first of all. But you know what? I want your prayers to be heard on my behalf. And when I pray for you, and I do, don't you want mine to be heard? I want the prayers of every person to be heard. So does God. That's why He designed this. Men, we are not to let our hair grow. It's not normally a problem. But, you know, I think, sadly enough, it might not be too much of a problem in the church because in society right now, it's not as popular as it used to be. We don't need to do it because it's popular or unpopular. We do it because it's right or not right. So we need to keep the hair teaching because it's right and to protect our prayer life. But unfortunately, society has continued to try to impress upon our sisters that they need to cut their hair or just trim it. Leave it long, but trim it. Many of you know where we're going. The word translated as long hair, and I'm not a Greek scholar, but it's a word kameo. It's a verb, not an adjective. In the English, it's an adjective. I think that's part of the entire problem. In the King James translation, it looks like an adjective. It's not originally. It's a verb. Basically meaning leave it alone. Let it grow unhindered. And so, yes, what that means is if a sister in the church grows her hair to the floor because she unhinders it, she doesn't cut it, well, there's not a person she'll meet that won't go, boy, you got long hair. Yes, she does, in two ways. The worldly way, because it looks long in length, and the godly way, because she's leaving it alone. But if she trims a quarter inch off the bottom, the world still says, boy, you've got long hair. No, she doesn't. According to what God said. Still looks long. But I want you to focus, sisters and brothers, on another passage about the women. In verse 15, the Bible says, but if a woman have long hair, if she leaves it alone, it's a glory unto her. Some sisters in the church leave their hair alone and it only grows to the shoulders. Doesn't look as long as one on the floor in length. It's still long. Hair left alone for men or women is long. Don't ever think it's not. But he says a sister's hair is given her for covering and it is a glory to her. It's the glory of God on our sisters. When I was in the hospital in Oklahoma City, for the first few days I didn't get out much at all. Then I got to get out in those
you know, fancy gowns they give you. I put one over the back as well because I know how those things work. But I didn't go out for a couple of days, and so Beverly was walking out of my room one day, and I don't know if it's the next room over or a couple of rooms over anywhere. There was, and I, not, no offense, sisters, but an elderly woman, and I don't know exactly how old she was. I never saw her. Beverly said it was an older woman, quite old, who was in the heart hospital as a patient, who was trying to get up and go for a walk in one of those gowns, but she didn't have one on the back, and she couldn't get it tied back there. Beverly didn't want her to embarrass herself, so she stopped to help her tie it. And as she got closer, Beverly had never met the woman. She grabbed her by the arm and said, "Come here." Beverly got closer, and she whispered in Beverly's ear, "You have the glory of God." The woman had hair, from what Beverly told me, about as short as mine. I don't know why. I don't know if she'd had treatment and lost it. I don't know. Maybe she cut it. I don't know. But she wasn't a member of the church. She just read in the Bible where a woman's long hair is given her for the glory of God. She knew that. One more example I want to give you, sisters. We were in Branson, Missouri, about 4 or 5 years ago. We were walking across the street. We go to Dick's Five and Dime downtown. If anybody's been to Branson, been to Dick's Five and Dime. We're walking across the street back to the car, and Beverly got in the car. I went. It was in the summer. I went to warm the van up because I'm just a great husband. I cool the van off, excuse me, not warm it up. That's wintertime. Anyway, I'm in the van. She gets in, and she's kind of flustered, and I said, "What happened?" She said, "A woman just stopped me on the street." I said, "Okay." She said, "I never met this woman before." She said, "She walked up to me." Now, sisters, I'm not just bragging on my wife. Many of you are like this. But this woman walked up to Beverly out of the blue. Never met her before. Beverly hadn't spoken. She's walking across the street. She walked up and grabbed Beverly. She said these words, "I can tell you're a Christian. Would you please stop with me and pray for my daughter?" There's only two ways she could have known or had any idea, any inkling she's a Christian. She's dressed modestly. She's got long hair. Because she never spoke. The woman saw her walking across the street. I don't know what you can do to walk across the street and show someone you're a Christian other than have long hair and be dressed modest. It's the glory of God, sisters. It's the way to make sure your prayers are heard. It breaks my heart to think of mothers in the church praying for their children, and God never hears them. I want to address one more thing tonight. And again, I'm not harping or pressing on anybody. I want to just mention something because I see this in our society so much, and I see it in myself more than I want. We as Christians cannot remember our life here is supposed to be work for others. We live in what the world calls, many writers of today, non-Christian writers say we live in the most, big word for you, Kyle and I and Brett talked about this at lunch, narcissistic, that's our world. I didn't used to know what that meant, so I went and looked it up. Self-involved. We live in a world that is so self-involved, it is absolutely nauseating. Everybody in this world could care less about you and me because they're so wrapped up in themselves. When we pull up to a four-way stop, they always forget that I should get to go first because they're in such a hurry to go first. Now, the reason I have a problem with that is because I get caught up in it too. But you've seen that. People that ram each other to four-way stop because both of them are there in such a hurry to go because it's their turn. It's all about them. We joke in our car when somebody acts that way because the kids go, "Dad, they hadn't heard that the world's all about me, not them." But you know, that's really true. People don't understand that the world does not revolve for their happiness. They're not supposed to be here to make themselves happy. Neither are we. The church is more important than I am. What's good for the congregation is more important than what's good for Roy. The two ought to be the same thing. Sometimes they're not. Jesus taught us on more than one occasion that if a man will not set himself aside, sacrifice himself, and pick up a cross and carry it, he cannot serve him. He didn't begin with the cross. He began with setting himself aside. My life is not supposed to be about me. Our lives as Christians are supposed to be about Christ, the Father, first, and about others as much as possible. Whether those others be the world or our brethren, we need to look outside ourselves. You know, we talked about this on the way down here yesterday. You don't have to look far in this world to see horrible suffering or small suffering. You don't have to look far in the world to find people in need of things we can help them with or to be grammatically correct, things with which we can help them. We need to be a people who look at others. Jesus in Matthew 25 taught us that when he said, when you did not visit those in prison, when you did not feed those who were hungry, you did not do it for me. I think sometimes we're guilty of that. More times than we care to believe. Because we go through life, we go through our day so concerned about our little problems and our little life and all the things we want and what we desire and our goals. We're not to be that way. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 13. Paul told the brethren of Thessalonica to not grow weary in well-doing. Paul a number of times referred to the work, the labor. The New Testament is full of references to the work and the labor of the Christian life. I think some of us are never going to get tired because we haven't started working yet. You know, there are days when I go to work when I don't come home tired. And you know, if I look and think about it, maybe there's a reason. Maybe I didn't give a lot of effort that day. Maybe I didn't give a day's work for a day's pay. But there are some days I know I work because I come home and I'm just beat. Emotionally, physically, mentally, I don't care what. We understand that in a lot of terms. I have been, when I lived in the Garland, Texas area as a youngster, I worked at the Beyer Rolnick Hat Factory. I don't even think it exists anymore. We made Stetson felt cowboy hats. My job for 8 hours every afternoon, from 2 to 10, was they gave me, I know this is going to be hard to believe, they gave me at 16 a blowtorch next to other teenagers with which I was supposed to burn the excess felt off dozens upon dozens of cowboy hats for 8 hours. It got boring, so we would occupy ourselves by burning each other with the blowtorch. But you know what threw off the line? Larry works with assembly people. He understands this. More often than not, somebody on the line wasn't doing a whole lot of work, and so the whole thing was thrown completely off. That's what's wrong with a lot of times in the church. So many of us aren't working. What's wrong with us? Church suffers. The lost are dying lost. I looked it up again today. I thought I had the number right, but I looked up again. I did the Google thing again today. It, as my best estimate could find on Google, 1.7 people die every second in this world. That's kind of mind-boggling. Because, you know, there's not just 1 second. There's one and then another and then another and then another all day long. So if you average that out, I'm not great at math, remember, but that averages out to about 2 every second. While we've been here tonight, before we leave, in an hour, 720 people around the world have died. You and I know most of them are lost. Now, you might not have reached those 720 because they might have lived somewhere you'll never go. It's our job to get somebody to them. We've got to care about them first. I'm not saying you don't. But if we get wrapped up in such a narcissistic attitude, we'll never realize there's people outside our little world. 17,280 people every single day die in this world. Now, so far today, we've not been one of them. But of those 17,280, some of those are going to be people we could have helped. We need to go. Philippians chapter 2 says in verse 4, "Let not every man look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." He didn't mean stick your nose in their business. He meant care about their situation. And it's not just the loss, brethren. We need to be a people who are so involved with and wrapped up and concerned about our brethren. Nothing gets by us. I'll be honest with you. Many of you know I attended the church, the congregation of Ada, Oklahoma for a long time. I don't now. I'm not faulting them. I'm faulting all of us that had ever gone there at that particular time, including this fat boy. There were people there, older people, I was younger, but there were older people, there was the church back then, whose only first name that I knew were brother and sister. I didn't know their first and last names because neither of us bothered to get close. Now I know Ada, Oklahoma wasn't the only place that happens. I attended services there for almost 30 years. There were people there I never had in my home and people who never had me in theirs. We need to be closer. We need to be people when our brothers and sisters are hurting, we know it. Or we're in such constant conversation with them that we find out quickly.
It bothers me when I found out somebody in the church that I know well has been in the hospital, but they're not anymore because I think I didn't know, and I feel bad about that. Why didn't I know? Number one, they didn't tell me. Number two, I didn't ask. We're not talking enough. We're not sharing enough. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 says, love the brotherhood. That's not an emotion. That's an action. Doesn't mean just, oh, I think highly of brother so-and-so. He's a good guy. I've known sister so-and-so forever. She's wonderful. She makes the best apple pie in the world. It means love them. Be involved with them. The Bible tells us to laugh when they laugh, cry when they cry. Not be so wrapped up in your own business that when they cry, you don't have time because you're having a good day and you're laughing. I want to read a passage in 1 John chapter 3 to remind you how serious this is. In 1 John 3, I want to read verse 16. This is in the middle of a passage about brotherly love, so there's more to it. But I want to read beginning in verse 16 of 1 John 3, verse 16. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. I hope you never have to do that. But in all honesty, I can't see many Christians laying down their lives for people they won't even bother to call on the phone. I like to think if somebody called me on the phone at 3 in the morning, normally they're not calling just to see how things are going and say hi at 3 in the morning. I tell people when the phone rings in the middle of the night, we all panic because it's almost always something bad, something's wrong. I always like to think if I look at the caller ID and I see it's somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning that I know, I'm going to answer it anyway. Because they probably need something. Now, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm almost never awake. And I don't get enough sleep as it is. Sleep is precious to me. I don't like being awakened by the phone. I don't like being awakened at all. But if they call me at 3 in the morning, they need something. If it's gas, I need to get up and go help. If it's prayers, I need to do what I can. But don't not answer. You know, there's a brother, and it's not Clint that I talked about last night, in the church who happens to be my stepfather, Warren Fairbanks. I don't know if any of y'all have ever known Warren. He's a good guy. I've used Warren the way I told last night I used Clint Morgan. Warren has been my handyman for years. He's my stepfather, kind of like a dad to me. And you know, I think he probably knows when he sees my number come up that I probably need help with something. But you know what? He always answers anyway. He never says, well, Roy's got something broken. I'm busy. It's Saturday morning. I called him one time on a Friday and said my Impala that I used to drive, Bonneville I used to drive, was having problems. He said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll come over tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, and we'll work on it. He said, I'll be there about 9. I thought, 9? Man, it's Saturday. I'm thinking noonish maybe. But he gets up at like 3 to go to work, so 9 is late to him. So I drag myself out of bed at 8:45 the next morning. He's sitting on the porch. I go out and see how he's doing. He said, you ready to go eat breakfast? I said, I thought we were going to work on the car. He said, I'm done. He'd been there and done. He's done. I don't know what time he got there, but he'd been there early, fixed the car, he'd ready to go eat breakfast. And if I call him tomorrow, he'll answer again. That's brotherhood service. We need to be that way. We need to be the kind of people who understand our brothers are important. So he said we ought to be willing, if necessary, to lay down our lives for them. Verse 17, however, says, but whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? I cannot say I love my brethren if I know they have need, and I'm not trying to help. I can use every excuse I want. It's Saturday. They're fixing fence. Why can't they fix fence some other day? I don't have time. Saturday's my day to sleep in or play golf or water the lawn. We can't be a people who say we love the brethren if we won't help them when they need it. Now, you may not have what they need. You may not be able to help them. But we can do all we can for our brothers and sisters and our neighbors. So in that part of the lesson, I want to close by mentioning, understand the lost are lost until we help them find the way. They're always lost. You walk in Walmart, you walk in any mall, you can tell they're lost. They've had that lost look in their face. This week we started school, we had new students. I could see them standing in the hall with their schedule, looking up and looking around, looking down, looking around, looking up, looking around. I didn't have to say, oh, are you lost? It's easy to tell. We can tell the lost. Help them.
They're dying 2 a second every day. And most of them are dying without us getting to them. And again, get to know your brethren. Help them when they need it. You know what we always say in Oklahoma? It's very common in the church. Somebody's had a tragedy, somebody's got a sickness, and you say, hey, call me if you need anything. I can promise you almost always they're not going to call you. I said that to an elderly sister one time after her husband died. I still feel bad about that. I told her to call me if she needed somebody to mow her lawn. She's never called me. She doesn't live around the area anymore. What I should have done was say, I'll be over Tuesday to mow your lawn. Or just show up and mow the lawn. Because she's too proud to call me. She's not going to call and ask. I wouldn't call and ask either. We need to be people who look outside ourselves. Look across the aisle in the services at the brother or sister in front of you, behind you. They're hurting. They're in need. May not be a big need, but it's a need. Address it. Help them. We need to be people of service. And we're not around a world like that. We're going to stand out. But we need to be people who are so concerned about others that we reach out for their needs. Tonight, I want to close. I'd actually had a couple more things on my list tonight, but as I tend to do, I got a little long-winded on some of them, and I wanted to make sure I covered those things. So I appreciate your patience tonight. And again, I don't preach these things to you all because I think you need them more than anyone else. I just talk about them because they're things I see from time to time that I think we need to be reminded of. We need to be strong in. And the more I look around the world I'm in, the more I don't want us to be people who get caught up any more than we already are in ourselves. I want to share something else with you. I looked not long ago. I didn't get a chance to relook today to write it down, but I looked not long ago on some survey somebody did about the top two words in every Facebook post that's ever been posted. Now, how they did this, I don't know. But I want you to think to yourself for a minute what you think the two most common words in Facebook posts are, and I'll tell you, they're I and me. I've been guilty of it. And I'm not knocking Facebook or any other email or anything, but brethren, we need to be people who are concerned about people besides I and me. We need to be people who are concerned about others. You know, the world probably doesn't care if I got up at 9:30 and made a tuna sandwich for breakfast. The world doesn't need to know all that. That's okay, I guess, if it's not wrong, I guess. But we need to be a people who have not gotten so wrapped up in ourselves that we think the world cares, needs to know everything we do. Instead, we need to know everything they're doing. We need to be concerned with what's going on in their world. When somebody says, pray for them, pray for them. I would encourage you when somebody says, pray for them, you say, let's do it right now. Because I can promise you, there have been times in the past when I've asked somebody to pray for me, and they said they will. I wonder, did they? You know when you tell them you're going to pray for them, they might wonder, did they? And I know I have gone home and not. I'm forgetful. I'm busy. If somebody says, pray for me, do your best to stop right there and pray for them.